This is episode number 312, dated Monday, October 30th, 2023.
You are listening to Sports Roundtable.
Hello, everybody. And welcome once again to Sports Roundtable. I am Bob Branco, glad to be with all of you today. Before we continue, let me introduce the sports panel members that we have here at the moment, and then we can move on with our special guest and a few other things to discuss as well. We start out with the Reverend Michael Garrett.
Hello and welcome to a very chilly 47 degrees Missouri City, Texas.
Somebody put a bug in my ear last night that there might be a hard freeze in Northwest Texas. Am I correct?
That's what I hear. That's what I hear.
Okay. By the way, this is episode number 312, dated Monday, October 30th, 2023. Don Wardlow, you're next. Hello.
Hi there, from Jersey, where it's actually warmer than it is in Missouri City, Texas, much to my surprise.
Luther King. Are you there, Luther King?
I think he stepped out. He said he'd be.
He might have stepped out. He was here a little while ago, though. And let's see if Peter Alchel has checked in. Peter, are you with us?
It's a beautiful day in Coos Bay, Oregon, like 65 degrees. That's not going to last, but it's gorgeous here, and I'm delighted to be here. I may have to sign off and on due to household stuff, but I will be here more than not.
All right. We'll just have to wait and see what happens. We do have a special guest who I will introduce momentarily, somebody that's very familiar to us. He was on our program several weeks back. But let me do some thanking first. Let's talk about those who make it possible for a Sports Roundtable to be made available to the general public. We start out with Raymond Gay, our producer. Thank you for what you do. Also, the media outlets, thank you for airing us when you do. That's very important. Tom and Lynn from Rosie's Place Chatline, thank you for posting our programs up on bulletin board number 14. And then, of course, Jacqueline Sylvia from JS Web Solutions, thank you for archiving our shows on my website. In order for you to find those archived shows, just go to www.brancoevents.com. Click on Sports Roundtable Podcasts, and you will see most of our archives from latest to earliest.
Make it official, Pete, if he's here.
Merci, Jackie!
Thank you.
There you go. And, of course, I'd like to thank Sheila for being our host for today's program. Sheila, thank you for taking the time once again to be with us and to help us out. We really appreciate that.
You're very welcome.
Back with us.
For a
second appearance, we have Bob Busser. Bob is a sports stadium historian, but that's not all he does. Bob is very well-versed in sports on all levels. We appreciate him coming back. Bob, I wasn't here when you were back on, and I regret that, but I had another commitment. But here I am today, welcoming you personally. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. I appreciate it. Nice to talk to all you people again. And by the way, it's 70 degrees here in NorCal, so we're all good.
Oh, see, you're lucky. It's raining in 46 here.
Awesome. Before we get to you, Bob, I'm going to spend a couple of minutes because there are three news items that I think, and I'll be very quick about this because we have a guest, but I think it's important to note three very important things going on in sports right now. We're going to talk about other things too, but Bill Belichick gets a 3-year extension. I think that's newsworthy. I think it's important to mention it. We haven't yet on the show. Also, I know it's the beginning of hockey season, and I know most people don't focus on hockey till the midseason, but when you're 7-0-1, that means something. So the Boston Bruins, kudos to you.
And the Vegas Golden Knights as well.
Yeah, Vegas, well, of course. 7 wins, 0 losses, 1 overtime loss.
I think the Avalanche, I don't know if they won yesterday or not, but if they did that thing, they'd be 8-0. But I don't know if they won or not yesterday. I didn't get a chance to check.
I thought they lost. They actually tied that game.
So that still counts as a point. So it's,
yeah,
so I mean, as long as, As long as you don't lose in regulation, you pick up a point.
They have losses and they have overtime losses. If you tie and go into overtime and you lose, it's a third category.
You get a point.
That's how it is. Because you get the 1 point. That's why you qualify.
You're fighting for the extra one.
And finally, I want to mention about Jeff Van Gundy. He joined the Boston Celtics front office. And I'm only mentioning it because Jeff Van Gundy is well known. A lot of people know who he is. He was a coach for many years, a good one from what I recall.
He was pretty good with the Knicks, but I do want to bring Bob in on this.
Yes.
And I don't know, you know, what teams he follows in the NBA, but I do want to put this to the group though. The opener with Kristaps Porzingis scoring 30. We're all not expecting him to score 30 a night, but I'm thinking in my head, if he can give me, you know, if I'm Coach Mazzulla, an 18-13-8, or maybe a 20 if we need it to offset what Brown and Tatum give me, that's a pretty good threesome. That could challenge the Bucks and the fledgling, pathetic Sixers.
I expect Porzingis to shoot. That's why we got him.
Yeah, but what
the Celtics are missing, Luther, and everybody else is
defense.
Is a rim protector at the four position. That's what we're missing in the starting line.
Yeah, and you traded Grant Williams.
That's the missing piece, which you could have kept
and maybe gotten, you know, traded somebody lower on the totem pole and added somebody on that front.
Right. But anyway, I don't want to prolong the discussion. I just wanted to bring out the topics for this. This is actually good
because dude, the fact that I'm thinking like, Can you get something and what are you going to get out of, you know, what more are you going to get out of White and what more are you going to get out of some of the other guys that you guys have?
Drew Holiday was a good addition.
We have to make a note of that.
I think that he's great.
He's going to help you defensively.
They're going to be contenders, the Celtics, but the question is, for the championship, the way they're set up at the moment.
They're just missing that one piece that I mentioned. Well, the Bucks are missing that same piece too, because they traded Holiday in that crazy 3-team trade.
Right.
With the Trailblazers and Boston and Milwaukee.
Bob Busser, are you into basketball at all or no?
I am. I go back as far as Wilt and some guy named Bill Russell beating the crap out of each other.
Speaking of hoops, do you remember the PA guys, like the late Andy Cheek and for the Sixers, Dave Zinkoff?
I do, yes.
So, Zinkoff was the coolest public address guy.
I found some of his stuff on YouTube. Oh my goodness.
He was crazy.
3-4-2.
You know what I don't know how many people still know is that the night Wilt scored 100 was at the Hershey Park Arena. Does that arena still exist, Bob Busser?
Yes, it does. And I was there a few years ago. The Hershey Bears minor hockey league team used to play there, but they moved to, I think it's called the Giant Center for a grocery chain, but Hershey Park Arena is still there. It's used for colleges and free skate and everything else, but there's plaques inside denoting what Wilt did there. You know, there was like 4,000 people in the stands, but 250,000 people square they were there, you know, and that it grows.
That park probably couldn't even hold 250,000. It probably wasn't that big to begin with.
No, it's, I think between 8,000 and 10,000. It's very
perfect size.
Absolutely. And it's very steep. It's
That was one thing I was talking to, you know, I was texting somebody about a couple of weeks ago, because folks were upset here. The TSU folks were upset here that they play at Nissan Stadium. And I'm thinking like, if you're that upset, you know, be a part of the funding arm and actually refurbish William Jasper Hale Stadium. You want to play your football games back in the hole? Get it up to code. A perfect 10,000 seat stadium. There you go. Simple answer.
Perfectly clean. So, what is your thought right now on the World Series? We have the Arizona Diamondbacks versus the Texas Rangers, two wild card teams to begin with. Did you expect this World Series combo?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I had 10,000 on it in Vegas. No, I'm kidding.
I think a few folks probably had Texas, but I don't think anybody had the kind of like the 1991 Minnesota Twins / Atlanta Braves worst to first with the Arizona Diamondbacks, even though they were a wild card, but they're there.
I never had the Diamondbacks, and I've been a baseball fan since I was 5 years old. I just turned 65, so I've seen a lot of baseball. And, you know, you think, okay, it's a great little story. Yeah, they're going to fade. Yeah. They're going to fade, and they never fade. And here they are. They knocked off the Dodgers in three straight, which, I'm glad it happened. You know, I was a Dodger fan, but I've always been a Red Sox fan. So, I'm lucky enough. I got to see two of the all-time greats, Sandy Koufax and Nolan Ryan. And I was a catcher in high school, and I thought, how the hell can you hit these guys with it going, moving like that? It was just amazing to watch.
What I can understand is how they stymied that potent Philadelphia batting lineup.
Well, it's called pitching. That's what it's called. It's called good starting pitching.
I didn't think Arizona had that.
Good enough quality pitching and a good enough bullpen that shut it down. It's called upsetting hitting, and that's what they did.
It's like the old adage, you know, once the ball gets rolling, once you get one good start, then everybody else ups their game. And the old adage, great pitching stops great hitting every time. And it's true. I mean, the Phillies, I thought after the first couple of games, I said, this is over in five.
Exactly.
Then all of a sudden you're like, geez, what just happened? You know?
Yeah.
And it's refreshing to see. It's refreshing to see two different teams in the World Series. One has never won one. They were the original Washington Senators expansion team. And, you know, they were the butt of many jokes for many years. And then you got the Diamondbacks. And, you know, haven't been very good for the last 5 to 10 years. And all of a sudden, bam, here they are.
The Rangers came close in 2011 until David Freese tied it and won it.
And I still remember that series. I'm like, there is no way this Cardinal team can come back again, can it? Cause I'm thinking to myself, the Rangers had this because they had their closer out there on the mound for crying out loud. I'm like, he's unhittable. That's what I had thought. And then all of a sudden I'm like, what just happened?
But the Dallas papers are talking about how the Rangers are a good road team. So they're really pinning.
Well, we'll find out tonight, especially being
they're pinning part of this future on how they play this three-game series.
Basically, whoever gets 2 out of 3 tonight in Arizona is probably going to be on the inside track.
When you think about it, they didn't do that well in Houston.
They won all the games. I got it backwards.
Yeah. You're right, guys.
They won all of them in Houston. And that normally doesn't happen.
Bob, can you talk about Arizona? You've been to the Arizona ballpark, presumably, because you've traveled, you know, the world and seen all the parks. How is Arizona?
Chase Field.
How is Arizona sort of shaping up as a good, home ballpark?
It's very warehouse-like. Excuse me. It's a decent ballpark, and they need the roof in Arizona because you don't want to sit in 120 degree heat watching a game. It's brutal.
That's insane. And,
you know, they've revitalized. I lived in Phoenix for 6 months, and the day I moved, it was 119, and I'm like, see you later. They've got a great ballpark corridor. They've got I don't even know what they call the Talking Stick Arena anymore. They've changed names on the Suns Arena so many times.
Yeah, I think that's what it's called, the Talking Stick Resort.
Yeah, something like that.
Whatever.
And they've got that right there, but it's a great ballpark. You know, they've got all the bells and whistles. They've got restaurants and bars and everything, and there's good sight lines. It's just very warehouse looking. Like, it's very, very rectangular in shape, I guess, or a semi-square. But, you know, like I said, they open the panels, and then when the weather's nice, like I heard tonight, they're going to have the roof open, which is great. But when you've got 100 and plus heat, there's no way. You gotta keep it closed.
I'm surprised that the Arizona Coyotes didn't get smart and basically put a hockey arena where they could actually play it. Because it's like there's probably enough space where the Diamondbacks are at and the Suns are at where they could.
The Coyotes played in a college facility last year.
Yeah, the Mullet Arena. On the Arizona State campus. Like, really?
It's on the Arizona State campus, and believe it or not, Arizona State has a NC2A hockey team, you know, who knew? But
and you know, if there's
there's talks about building an arena that the Coyotes want to build their own arena. I think somewhere in Mesa, maybe. But you know, they have problems in Glendale, and there's nothing wrong with that Glendale arena. They were both sides were butting heads, and it's a nice arena because it's right next to the now I think it's called State Farm Stadium.
Where the Arizona
Cardinals play. It's an entertainment area. They've got restaurants and shops and hotels and the whole nine yards. And I thought it was stupid for them not to come to some sort of agreement to leave them there.
Yeah. But you know how that goes when it comes to city politics.
One thing I like a lot is in the middle innings on the broadcast, they have Chris Garagiola, which is Joe Garagiola's grandson.
Yep.
Joe did the 1975 World Series on the radio and did a bunch on TV. Skip a generation. His grandson is doing the middle innings for the
Diamondbacks. He worked. I remember Chris Garagiola, his broadcast partner for most of those road trips was Little Tuffy Ghostwitch, former Diamondbacks catcher.
And then,
now he's working with Candiotti.
Exactly.
And by the way, this is Greg Schulte's last series. He will be retiring at the end of the year.
Did not know that.
That was in the offseason, and also I found out today that the voice of NC State Athletics, Gary Hahn, will be retiring at the end of the men's basketball season as well.
Hey, Bob, isn't it true that the Arizona Diamondbacks have a swimming pool somehow in the stadium, or is that?
Oh, yes, they do.
Is that myth?
Yeah, no, that's true. It's in right center field, and you can, nobody wants to see me in a bathing suit, believe me, but it's there, and it's amazing how when they show the pool, there's always some girl in a bikini. It's shocking, I know, but it's kind of quirky. It started out, I believe, with the hot tubs like they used to have, or they still do. When Colorado Springs Sky Sox played in their ballpark, they had a hot tub.
I miss that minor league team. I'm sorry. Why do they have to be stupid and basically disrupt the Colorado Springs Sky Sox as the Rockies AAA affiliate?
It's called money. It's called
stupid.
They got a new ballpark and, it's whatever. It is what it is.
Security Services Field, Dan Karstner was their voice.
I know Dan. Yeah. I've known Dan for a long time.
He was their voice for the Sky Sox. The only thing I couldn't do was find their broadcasts. But I've heard he had some good calls, and I'm thinking like, dang, he should still be doing Sky Sox baseball.
Well, Dan did it for their length, and I know a lot of the PCL broadcasters are real good buddies of mine, and we all called him Grumpy because he wanted to retire, and he got being in baseball 30 plus years and the travel, a lot of buses and late night plane rides. It wears you out. You start getting older and it's like, geez, another plane ride. It's tough on you.
Tom Stocker was the original voice of the Redbirds, and back then it was the Chicks, and he did a lot of those games at the old Tim McCarver Stadium.
That is on my website as well. Tim McCarver Stadium. I've been there. It was
the only ballpark with turf, the only ballpark with carpet that they played on. No grass, I think.
They had grass in the outfield, I believe. I've got to check my pictures, but they had a carpet infield. You're right. And it was right next to the Liberty Bowl and the Mid-South Coliseum, which is still there, but it's boarded up.
Yeah.
So just getting back to the Diamondback Stadium with the pool and the restaurants and the bars and the warehouse, as you call it. How is the fan noise compared to, say, I don't know, the Phillies? How distracted can road teams get there? I mean, whenever I hear Phoenix play during the regular season, I usually are more rooting for the away team than the home team.
You hit it right on the head. It's like almost like going into a Charger game in LA. There's more visiting fans than there are Charger fans. Mm-hmm. And it's the same way. You've got a lot of transplants in Arizona. You've got a lot of the snowbirds and people who have retired to Arizona in the heat. They may be from Chicago or Boston or New York or Wisconsin, wherever. And of course they're going to pull the Cubs are the biggest draw in Arizona because mm-hmm. there's so many Cubs fans there. And of course the Cubs in Mesa have been there forever. So, it's a good fan base, but it's not like Philadelphia or Boston or the Mets or anything like that, where it's fanatical, but they do get into it when they get in the World Series. I don't want to say they're bandwagoners, but you know what I mean? It gets amped up once the playoffs starts, which is common in any ballpark, you know, even in Texas.
I would imagine there aren't too many Texas Ranger fans in Arizona.
I don't know because I mean, you know, usually you're probably seeing like Cubs, as he said, maybe Dodger fans too, because Dodger fans travel well.
Right. But Arizona is where all the northern folks come down who get tired of winter. And the last I checked, there's not much of winter in Texas. At least not in Dallas.
Except for today, it's in the 50s.
What's that, Michael?
Not much winter in parts of it.
Parts of it, right.
Yeah,
right.
Go to Amarillo. You'll find winter.
Yeah, you'll find it.
Well, there are a couple of really bad scenes. Was it 2 years ago when the power grid went out and all that?
I think there was like a big humongous whoop-de-doo story about it.
That was statewide.
So, I know we talked about the World Series. I sort of missed part of the conversation because my house, you know, things intervened. But what is the general sense of, it's 1-1.
Split.
It's a split. So what's going to happen? What do you think is going to happen in the next three games?
Don't bet against Bochy.
Yeah, don't.
Don't bet against Bochy.
But I mean, he's
one of the greatest postseason managers of all time. He knows, being an ex-catcher, he gets it. He understands pitchers and he goes with his hunch and he's usually right. Boch manages old school. He takes some of the analytics, which I think is way too much. They overanalyze everything, but Boch plays the old school way. Texas plays a lot of old school baseball too.
Mm-hmm.
And in the World Series, a lot of these teams are hindered because, you know, people say, well, how come the Red Sox get in the World Series every 3, 4, 5 years and they win? Because they know how to play old school baseball.
Exactly.
They know how to hit and run, hit the cutoff man, which most teams have no idea what that is.
And steal bats.
Thank you. Exactly. Exactly. They just foul pitch off.
And they look for their pitch. They're great at it.
You know, Pedroia, Petey was awesome at it. And then, you know, with the Red Sox, it was like, okay, who do you want to pitch to? Big Poppy or Manny? You know,
neither?
Yeah, exactly.
How about neither?
You have to be out of your mind in a playoff game to pitch to Big Poppy. He has wrecked more teams in the postseason than anybody. You know, I mean, ask the Yankees. You know, they see their dreams.
Ask the Cardinals for 2013. Ask them.
Bob, do you think analytics is killing baseball?
In a way, yes. I mean, honestly, the one that gets me is launch angle and exit velocity. Who cares? It went out of the ballpark. You know, war and all these, you know.
I don't even know what war is. No one's explaining war to me.
Whatever the hell that means, I don't know. But, we're all roughly the same age. We all like hearing the stats, you know, home runs, RBIs, stolen bases.
Right.
And the batting average.
That's it. You want to know who was leading the league in hitting. And now there's this controversy. Oh, well, batting average doesn't mean that much. Really? Oh,
man, please. Okay, answer me this then. You tell me, like, that stat's overrated. Tell me that when your team gets knocked out of the playoffs.
Exactly.
Look at the Atlanta Braves. It was like, oh, Ronald Acuna's going to do this. What did he do in the series against the Phillies? Not much.
Exactly.
Look at the Astros. How many of their big dudes everybody was talking about was going to come through? They didn't come through in the series. That's all you really care about. That has nothing to do with analytics. Nothing.
Exactly.
It does have something to do with analytics. What bothers me about this conversation is that we're a bunch of us who are, you know, who are older, who by reflex don't like analytics. Luther, you don't quite qualify as being older.
No, I'm not.
You're not. I get that and forgive me. But my point is we were all on the same page. I would love to get somebody on this show who really gets analytics who can talk about it in ways that we're not getting the other side of the issue. And I'd really like to get somebody on who says, okay, you know, here's what analytics does, what it doesn't do. Here's where it works well. Here's where it doesn't work well. Because I just feel we're in a loop that we're
basically
not.
What you're asking is basically somebody that can give us a nice tutorial on what the analytics are supposed to do and what they are and what they are not.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is, what's the success rate?
Exactly.
Right.
That's right.
Well, look at the playoffs. Look at the playoffs in baseball. Most teams that use analytics that we thought might still be in it are out of it.
Yep.
Right.
Dodgers. Look at the Dodgers. Gone.
The Yankees, I mean, you know, they're hitting 8 gazillion home runs and everybody's all happy. They get close to the playoffs. They can't win.
Because why?
They can't manufacture a run to save their life. And I'm not bagging on the Yankees, but it's a lot of teams.
It's a fact.
Dodgers can't do that. They've got Mookie Betts, who is a great player, but he's not worth all that money they're paying him.
And
you know, you've got a bunch of guys waiting again, like the Yankees, waiting to hit that.
Waiting for that one pitch.
We have said, good pitching. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen. Look at the Yankees the past, what, since 09?
Exactly.
We haven't done crap. We got the playoffs. That doesn't.
Right, and we've had problems going further than that. Now, I don't think this means the D-backs are going to win, but I noticed, and I couldn't help it, how many bunts they laid down in the first couple of games.
And that's a beauty.
And don't they lead the league in sacrifices, Don?
I don't know that, but
I think they do.
I know it's driving me absolutely bananas that the Yankees, since that 80s, haven't been able to bunt.
Because, here's why. A lot of these teams at the lower levels that, you know, are supposed to be teaching these guys how to do this, they're not.
They're all teaching launch angle and how to hit the ball 8 miles. And
exactly.
I got news for you. You got a guy out there that has a good breaking ball or a slider that will buckle you at the knees, or he has movement on his fastball, you're not going to get elevated.
You ain't hitting it.
Sorry.
I mean, and baseball is already hard to play anyway. You're already going to have even more of a problem when you're trying to hit a ball with a cylindrical bat with a pitcher that has basically nothing that's straight, with late breaking movement down and away or down and in to where you don't know where it's coming from. Heck, they can even come up and in and change your eye level, and then they get you down and away.
I got into a big argument with my brother, who's 10 years older than I am, but he's a know-it-all, you know, and in that vein, we don't talk anymore. But anyway, he tried to tell me once that hitting a golf ball was harder than hitting a baseball. And I'm you've got Nolan Ryan out there throwing 95 plus with movement and 40,000 people screaming their heads off in your ear. And you're, like you said, hitting a cylindrical,
cylindrical bat.
Trust me, I played. It ain't easy. If you guys got any pitcher with movement, forget it.
Look at Gaylord Perry. Look at Randy Johnson. Look at what Adam Wainwright for the Cardinals. Look at your guy, Clemens for a short period of time. Kerry Wood, same way. I mean, we can go
on and on.
Yeah.
The knuckleball.
Phil Niekro, Gaylord Perry. Yeah.
And Petey, Pedro Martinez.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
This little skinny guy with long fingers.
And Hideo Nomo.
Like nobody else.
Hideo Nomo.
And, you know, I talked to Billy Williams. Fergie Jenkins, I've known, we've been friends for almost 50 years. Mm-hmm. And I was at Wrigley Field and I was sitting in the dugout with Billy Williams and Fergie. And I said, Billy, please tell me about Sandy's perfect game. And their pitcher threw a one hitter, which to me is the greatest game ever pitched. They didn't even win on a hit. It was, you know, Maury Will stealing a base, sacrifice the whole bit. But he says, Bobby, let me tell you, and he's poking me in the chest and he goes, Becker came up in the first inning and he goes, we're going to get Sandy. He doesn't have bleep. And Billy was fourth up or whatever he was. And he walks back and he goes, boys, we're in for it. He goes, Sandy was throwing. We knew we were going to get fastballs. He was throwing so hard and his hat never flew off. It kept flying off and he struck out the last 6 guys in a row for a perfect game. I mean, come on, that, you know, and ball, give me a break.
there was a story that I heard from when Ken Hawk Harrelson did his Hall of Fame induction, like the White Sox, I think it was either Koufax or Ryan, first dude up at the plate, struck out. He doesn't even take the bat off his shoulder. He goes back to the bat rack and says, boys, this game is over. And
Exactly. You know, people say, well, Ryan pitched. He's not that great. Yeah, actually, yes. He pitched for so many bad teams. And yes, he walked a ton of people. I get that. I grew up in Anaheim or Fullerton, which is close to Anaheim. So I saw Ryan pitch probably 25 times. And, you know, he had that grunt and I've never heard this from a pitcher, even sitting in the upper deck, you could hear the hiss of the ball. in top of Ellie Rodriguez's catcher's mitt or Torborg, whoever's catching him. And I would just shake my head going, there's no, I would not want to get hit by that.
I mean, I've heard pitches on radio when, you know, they had their parabolic mics and you can tell with the good ones.
Oh yeah.
It has, I mean, Don, you and I know this from, you know, and a few of us that listen to like baseball games with our favorite broadcast teams or vice versa. If the effects mics are good and you have an ace of a staff, that baseball, when they're throwing it, it has a sound to it.
You betcha. And when they're goosing it, that's another sound when they're just barely getting it up there.
And a lot of folks are like, baseball doesn't have a sound. Oh, please.
Yeah.
Just listen harder.
Funniest Ron Luciano story. It'll take 1 minute. Ron Luciano in his book was talking about the first time he ever saw Nolan Ryan pitch. Mm-hmm. And Nolan threw one in. Oomph. And whoever was at the plate said, Ron, what was that? And Luciano says, sounded low. And the hitter said, sounded and
low.
Luciano said, what do you mean? You think I can see it?
Nope. Cause you know why? It was right by you. That's why you couldn't see it. You could hear it. It just was like, bye. And well, you couldn't even get it.
Sandy Koufax, when he pitched, his fastball rose. And Willie Mays has told the story many times. He goes, I couldn't hit the damn thing. It always rose on me. He'd get him once in a while. But then he goes, we got Koufax, and then we'd have to get Drysdale the next day. And he'd hit me every time. First time up, he'd hit me, you know. And Sandy was afraid to hit somebody because he was afraid he'd kill him. You know, Drysdale was just
Drysdale was just nasty, okay?
He didn't care. You know, that was his plate, and if you infringed on it, look out.
Who was the other guy that was like, that? I mean, I get Gibson was like that too. Yeah. Gibson.
Oh yeah. And that's all that's not allowed anymore. And it takes a lot away from the game.
Sure does. I mean,
can you imagine if you're a manager and Sandy's out there, Nolan Ryan's out there, Gibby, Drysdale, or Seaver, or any of those, Marichal,
fight a blue
five innings while you've reached your, you know, second time through the lineup, we're taking you out. Gibson would have stuck it in his ear.
Yeah.
He would have hit him in the ribs. He wouldn't have hit him right in his head.
One of the best stories I ever heard was by McCarver. McCarver was a young kid. And Gibson's pitching in St. Louis. It's a hot day, the whole bit. And first two guys get on and McCarver comes out and Gibson goes, what the hell are you doing out here? And he goes, Bob, I just want you to know there's runners on first and second. And he goes, no bleep. I put him there.
Yeah. and he would get out of it almost every time.
Oh, absolutely. Because, you know, he was, the thing about these guys too, which is we haven't talked about was they're intimidating.
Oh Lord, yes.
Randy Johnson, you got 6'9" on the mound.
More like 6'10".
6'10".
Yeah. He was like an elephant.
And, since I can't see, my then wife would tell me, that guy's scary looking out there.
Oh yeah. Well, the story about Koufax in the 65 World Series, Harmon Killebrew said, we knew he was pitching game 7, we knew his elbow was killing him, we weren't going to get a curveball, we were going to get all fastballs, we still couldn't hit him. And they got 2 hits. I mean, what does that tell you?
What about Don Larson's perfect game in 56? I wonder what those hitters were thinking on that day with Louisiana Lightning on the mound.
It's
throwing nothing but gas.
You know, so once in a while, these guys catch lightning in a bottle. And they just have it. And the thing about Don Larson was he was served with divorce papers, I think, that day or the day after or something like that.
No.
Wow.
Yeah, it's your story. Yeah.
So
Think about the guys who caught those guys or who have to catch those guys every fourth day.
Oh, yeah. As a catcher, I would have loved it. Oh my God. You just put down one and just kind of glance up at the batter going, good luck, Bubba. You know?
Well, you can just sit back there like, it's going to be one of them days.
Exactly.
And you know, McCarver went from Gibson right to Steve Carlton.
Now, he sure did. With the Phillies.
You're going from one Mr. Nasty to another Mr. Nasty.
I wouldn't want to be
him catching those two.
And think about this, what we just discussed. Think about this for a second though, guys. think about the Reds of the 90s with their bullpen. They didn't even need starters, but think of the starters plus the bullpen of the Reds or any bullpen you could stack up.
Yeah, the Nasty Boys, and they had Jose Rijo for one starter. I don't know who else.
It was Randy Meyer and Rob Dibble. That was the
bullpen. Right, and Norm Charlton. Those were the three Nasty Boys. Yeah. Right.
I'm wondering.
I'd love to hear the pop of the glove.
Oh, like I said.
Those pitchers are on. I just love
it. And Mike, you know this. You can tell if you listen to a radio broadcast, you know that you know what that sound is, especially when a pitcher's on. You know what that sound is.
You do now. They just didn't have that kind of microphones in the 60s. Well, yeah. It's too bad. It's a pity. And but the sound is here now.
And look at the hitters. You can definitely tell when a hitter's got it.
When somebody launches one good, oh man.
Oh boy. That's a beauty.
Peter, go ahead, Peter.
I was just curious. I mean, we talked about how easy it would be for the catcher, but I would imagine some of these pitchers must be hard to catch. I mean, given the veering of the ball and the speed and the nastiness, as we said, sure, it's
effectively wild.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know much about catching, but I'm curious.
Carlos Zambrano was like the master of it. I mean,
I'm sort of curious to know what your thoughts are, Bob, about catching people like that. I mean, it must be a special challenge of its own.
What they do is, you know, some pitchers like Greg Maddux had his own personal catcher. He didn't like Javi Lopez, but he had his own personal catcher. It's, you have to grow, being a catcher, you're probably the smartest guy on the team. Pitchers have been known to have 5 cent heads that they can throw by anybody. And like I said, if you're not Ryan or Koufax, forget it. It's not going to work because everybody can hit a fastball. But as a catcher, you have to work with your pitchers and know what they throw, know the break on the ball, you know, and once you get with that rhythm, you know, like Maddux and Hoffman, they didn't throw hard at all. Trevor Hoffman threw that Bugs Bunny changeup. And
you still couldn't hit it.
You knew it was coming and you couldn't hit it. You weren't going to do anything with it. But the catchers know this and they know how to call the game, where the ball is going to be, especially with a guy with a lot of movement like, Randy Johnson on Mr. Snappy, his slider. That thing had bite to it. And, Fergie Jenkins told me this story one time. My wife told me to ask him, Fergie, did you ever have any help? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And he said, hell yes. How do you think I kept the ball down with the wind blowing out at Wrigley? He had a little extra on his slider and everybody knew it, but nobody, you know, it was part of the gig. But you know, it's the movement on the pitch that the catcher knows about, and you train yourself. You work with the pitcher so long, you know what you know they're what they're going to do and how the pitch is going to react and how it's going to move. And obviously, sometimes it doesn't. You get a worm killer, a 55-foot slider, and you got to be like Gary Cheevers back there. You know, you got to be a hockey goalie, and that's what you're taught to do is block the ball any way you can. Don't let it get by you. And
kind of like what Doug Marbelli had to deal with the late Tim Wakefield, because he was his own personal catcher.
That irritates me to no end to watch catchers today because they're lazy. I will say it. You know, you watch them catch and they don't block the ball properly.
No, they don't.
Well, they want the catcher to stay on one knee now. That's part of analytics.
That's exactly. The only thing I did this is going back 50 years when I was in high school. You know, I caught like Johnny Bench with my hand behind my back because I got tired of my right hand all bloodied and bruised every game. So, but you know, we were taught the right way to play. They would take the pitching machine and dial it up to 95 plus and throw fastballs and breaking balls in the dirt. So we learned to block the ball. That's the only way you're going to do it. Not with this Ole crap, you know, and you got to move your body. And when you're sitting on or, you know, squat like that, the one legged knee thing, you don't have the dexterity to block.
You don't have a vertical base either.
No. I mean,
Ted Simmons and Yadier Molina for the Cardinals are about the only two catchers that I can remember that did it that, not the one-legged thing, but both legs and maybe Matheny. Those are like the only other Cardinal catchers that I can remember that had that vertical base and could block the ball. He got through them occasionally, but for more often than not, no. That ball didn't get through.
Luther, you're right. You're not going to block everyone. There's going to be one where they just yank a slider or a breaking ball or a fastball. And you know, it's like, do I have a fishing net? I can go get it. You know, you just might as well run and go back and get it because, you know, it's like anything else. Not everything is going to be perfect to block. You know, it's, you know, you may block one and it may hit off your pads and go shooting towards the dugout. There's nothing you can do about that. You know, it happens.
We should check with Sheila and see if we got any.
I was just going to go there.
So Sheila, do we have anybody that would like to talk to us? Talk to Bob Busser? Any hands raised at the moment?
No, sir.
Sheila, she's just sitting back there just enjoying this conversation. As much as we're enjoying talking about it.
So Sheila, if somebody does raise their hand, let us know.
And just drop me a jump in.
I will certainly.
I dare you to try and,
Cause you know what Troy might be doing? He might be trying to set up for his own podcast. He was advertised on the same website where I'm getting advertised.
Nice.
So he could be having the same to write today. I hope he is.
Don, I look forward to talking to you again too.
I've got a pod. I need to find a way to, you know, get your contact and we can get, you know, get that accomplished as well.
We had a lot of fun, Bob. We'll do it again.
Yeah, Wardlow has my information and so does Bob. They have all my information.
You know it, Luther. I can send it to you.
Perfect.
So I noticed that Dusty Baker retired.
Yeah, that happened. What was it?
The seventh winningest manager of all time, from what I understand.
I'm just curious.
Any thoughts about Dusty? Because that guy had a career. He was awesome.
I mean,
I know he won a World Series, and you know, being a catcher, Dusty was an outfielder, and Bochy came after him in San Francisco with basically the same team, Sansbury Bonds. And they won. Dusty's problem was he didn't know how to handle a bullpen. And Bobby Cox was the same way. With that pitching staff he had in Atlanta to win only one World Series.
That's a crime.
And then you have what?
You had Denny Nagel and then you had, who was the other one? Avery?
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, him too.
Yeah.
You had Elwood also.
Oh yeah. I forgot about Kevin Elwood. That pitching staff should have at least had two. At least.
A problem with a lot of managers when they get in the big moments like that, like I mentioned about Boch. I've been watching Bochy since I've met him a few times. Very nice guy. We have the same head size.
He was in San Diego.
Yeah.
I remember him with the Padres.
My wife is from San Diego. We would go to spring training and I get a media pass and I go down and talk to everybody. And you know, Boch got it. He was like I said, catchers make the best managers because they know the game inside out. They know the tendency of their pitchers and they know, you know, when to yank somebody and when to, you know, it's kind of like in the movie Major League where he brings in Vaughn to face Clue Haywood and you know, and he goes, I got a hunch about this guy. And that's the way they manage. They have that sixth sense where they think, you know what? I think he's got it today. You know, they may get it from a bullpen session. And also your bullpen coach is huge. You know, hey, he's got it or you better keep, you might have to have a quick hook with this guy. You know, that's you to have the coaches like that is invaluable.
A guy that I think my team is missing pitching coach wise. I mean, I like Dusty Blake, don't get me wrong, but when the Cardinals had Dave Duncan, huge, in my opinion. When they had Duncan and then whoever else was down there in the bullpen, that pitching staff was pretty good. But since they've not had Dunk as the pitching coach, it's kind of gone a little bit downhill. It's kind of gone off the rails.
It's the same thing. He understands it. He was a catcher.
Exactly.
You know, and you know, we're going to hire so and so, an ex outfielder as a manager, and I think
unless he's a
good bench coach, that's not going to work. Be very good. Billy Martin was another good manager, but he was totally paranoid. But he was an infielder, but he got it. He played the infield. He was one of the quarterbacks out there on the infield, and you know the guys that get it had an important role to play. They were not the star players because we can go back to Ted Williams. Ted wasn't the greatest manager because he got frustrated because nobody could hit like Ted. Nobody could hit like Ted. Okay. I'm sorry, you know, and it was frustrating for him and Williams hated pitchers anyways, you know,
look at Joe Torre for as long as he managed former catcher
and he got it, and you know, I can tell you this now because the people involved are dead, but when Ted Williams was first with the Senators in 69, his de facto manager was third base coach Wayne Terwilliger. Mm-hmm. And since they're both dead now, I'm allowed to tell you that, but I couldn't when Twig was alive. Twig was later a great friend of mine because he told me not to.
Oh.
But he said, but Twig told me, he says, Ted said, hey, Twig, you know this better than I do. You've been doing this for a million years. You make the actual orders, you know, just, you're the third base coach, you know, go to it. And with between Twig during the game and Ted, you know, between the games, they had one heck of a hitting team. Yeah, they couldn't pitch like somebody just said.
Bob Besser, yeah.
Bob,
he hated pitchers.
You're right. He wasn't great with pitchers. That's right. But he sure did make some hitters, and he had Twig between the lines.
Well, here's another thing. Terry Francona, who just retired. Tito.
Oh, Lord, yes.
He great manager, and he always had a great bench coach. That's the key. Even Boach has a great bench coach. You gotta have that. You can't have 48 eyes all over the ballpark.
No.
Somebody that can communicate with other players, you know, other than the manager, if you're going to chew them out or whatever, that's going to take the guy aside and say, da, 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 you need to do this. You have to have a great bench coach. Tito always had that. Boach has it, you know. They have their right-hand men, like Don said with Wayne Terwilliger. Right-hand men are the unsung heroes to baseball because they're basically the second manager, you know.
Guys, answer this question for me then.
Mm-hmm. You know, okay.
And I've been thinking about this lately. All my years of being around baseball, you know, I'm probably 60 years, you know. So, what really makes the difference in a baseball manager? It's not like a basketball coach or a football coach.
Even though we have some of them that are buffoons.
But baseball is different, just like we've talked about. You in terms of hitting, you gotta hit a 97 mile per hour fastball with a cylindrical bat. and the pitcher's got to be able to locate the ball, paint the corners.
Yep. And you gotta know where the umpire is at strike zone.
Yeah, yeah. How does the manager influence, you know, baseball?
That's a good question because like Boach, he understood pitching. To me, if you have a good manager who understands pitching, pitching still is, you know, like
pitching still the creme de la creme.
Good hitting. And if you have a good pitching staff and a manager who understands pitchers, are quirky people. They're not normal people. They're like musicians. They walk to their own drummer. I walk to my own drummer.
Look at Mark Friedrich when he was with the Tigers.
Absolutely.
And especially the left-handers and the knuckleballers.
Oh, Lord, yes. Ron Guidry, Mark Friedrich. Go down the list.
You have to be a great manager too with a pitching staff. You've got to know their personalities. You know, every pitcher has a different personality. You know, we talked about Drysdale. He was just nasty.
Oh, he was filthy.
Nasty.
Dirty.
You know, you better have your steel underwear on there when you went out there to take them out of the game because you're probably going to get an earful. But you have to respect those guys because they were the best of the best. You know, 1.12 ERA from Gibson. Come on.
What did you think about Tom Kelly for the Twins when he was the Twins manager when they won those two world championships? Where did you think he got it with that team? Especially when he had Aguilera and then Jack Morris later on and, you know, some other teams like that.
Luther, I don't remember who his bench coach was, but he, you know, there are people that understand pitchers. TK was one of them. And, you know, he understood how long he could go with somebody. And that's a problem with today's managers. They yank the pitchers way too quick.
Too early.
Okay, you've gone twice through the lineup. Well, the analytics say we've got to take you out. If the guy's throwing a three hitter, who cares? Let him pitch.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, analytics is not the be all end all. Like,
no, it's not.
If your pitcher, this is just my thought. If he's pitching well enough and he's got a lead to work with and his defense is working well behind him, until you can tell he gets tired, let him go. Don't take him out after four and not have him qualify for a win.
Today, everybody's impatient. You get to the third time in the batting order, you're out. It's terrible.
And you're already in the fourth inning. He's already thrown 60 plus pitches.
Now, Saturday, they had a reason to take the Texas pitcher out of there.
Yeah, because they had wore him out.
They had a lot of hits, but a lot of the games. You're right. I disagree with a lot of the quick hooks, but
I mean, I don't like Captain Hook, especially when a pitcher's rolling.
But you mentioned earlier, you know, Smokey Alston could do it with the Dodgers because he had with Koufax and Drysdale. He got respect. Smokey got respect. Shane Dean's got it with St. Louis with Gibson.
Uh-huh. You know,
he could do it. I don't know how many others could have.
Not many.
I want to go back to Michael.
Hold on. Reverend Mike, go ahead. You were going to say something. Go ahead. I thought I was going to say something.
Michael, I wanted to go back to Michael's question because I thought it was the way I heard it was interesting. How does a baseball manager, I mean, we talked about the weird personalities and the overuse of analytics, but that's the same in every sport, right? Football, sure. You got the weird quarterbacks, you got the weird defensive players, you got the wide receivers who are prima donnas, you got, you know, all this stuff.
You basically got a little bit of everything.
Basketball, you know, there are fewer players, but again,
they're a lot of egos.
High intensity egos. I don't want to talk about hockey. I'm not knowledgeable enough, but it's just,
some hockey guys.
There aren't too many egos in hockey, Peter.
Well, I don't think that's true either, but we'll come back to that another time.
We'll come back to that.
My question to Bob is, how does managing baseball differ given the similarities between the athletes, high strung, you know, really smart, you know, talented people? How does managing baseball differ from the other sports?
We've got 5 minutes left though.
Oh, honestly, baseball is a unique sport because it's one guy with the ball. Not everybody gets to handle the ball. The guy on the mound has the ball. And the managers will always, if they have a good catcher, like Yachty, you had Pudge Rodriguez, Fisk, these guys, Yogi, they were second managers. They could just look into the dugout with a glance and the manager would know, hey, this guy's running out of gas. Because you're still far enough away. You can see the movement on the pitchers and you can kind of tell, but the catcher, again, I'm not patting myself on the back, but the catcher, it is another right-hand man for the manager. He's going to go out there. If you notice, when the pitchers walk to the mound, if you can hear the description, or when the manager's going to the mound, the catcher's usually the first one to see him, and he's losing it. There's no slider, bite on the slider, or, you know, his fastball's, you know, just flat. Then, you know, the manager can go out there and, you know, give him a pep talk. Thanks, you've done enough. Goodbye. You know, and it's, being a successful manager, you have to have a lot of great lieutenants. You've got to have, you know, your catcher, your bullpen coach, your bench coach. And like Don said, Wayne Terwilliger, you can't do it alone. And they rely mostly on that. And that's how come you become good managers. And they know when it's time to pull somebody, the good managers like Boch. I'm going to keep going back to Boch because he doesn't manage like everybody else.
Well, let me add.
Gentlemen,
a couple more guys.
Time out for 1 second. Mr. Franco, you have about 6 minutes.
Thank you, Sheila. Any hands raised?
No. Nope. No, sir. No, sir.
Okay. All right.
The three I was going to think of was like Earl Weaver, Harvey Keene, Sparky Anderson. Think of those three. They got it.
The one gripe I have against Earl Weaver is he only won one World Series.
Yep. And he waited for the 3-run homer too much.
Yeah, he, that was his thing. You know, he would rely on the 3-run home run and of course him and Palmer, they, that was like a bad.
Oh, I forgot about Jim Palmer, but when Palmer was right.
Did not get along, you know?
No.
And you know, it's, you know, Palmer will say it now with a chuckle, but they got in some knockdown dragouts and Earl was more of a showman with his, you know, getting in everybody's face and, you know, putting on the show, getting kicked out of a game, like the infamous Tom Haller incident, you know, and all that. And you just have to sit back and laugh. And what he was doing was trying to, part of it to me, he was just trying to get his team a little calmer, you know, take them out of a bad situation. If he had to sacrifice himself, he would, you know, and that's another great part of managing. You got to know when to go out there and choose some, you know what, on an ump, even though he may get run, but it's, you know, half the time they're doing it, they're trying to fire up their team.
Sparky Anderson, I think he got a couple with the Reds and the Tigers, and then Harvey Keene had a chance to get one.
Yeah.
With Harvey's wall bangers in 82.
One thing that is very deceiving is the framing of the pitch frame on baseball. One of my good friends is a former major league umpire. and Dale Scott, and Dale has told me, he says, Bobby, the umpires hate that blankety blank thing because it's not true, because you've got movement on a pitch and it just doesn't show up right. You know, he says most of the time that thing is wrong. So, you know, the fans jumping down him. If you look outside of Angel Hernandez, the umpires are right 98% of the time on pitch calls. You know,
Angel Hernandez is like the worst umpire in all of baseball. And that framing thing almost feels like, remember when they had that stupid quest check and they would, you know, like frame is like, the umpire, and the TV guys are like, he may have been off on that pitch.
Well,
and it's like umpires are dealing with scrutiny no matter what they do.
Well, the thing is, you have hitters, you had guys like Tony Gwynn or in today's game, Bryce Harper. These guys know the strike zone.
Of course
they know what's a strike and what's a ball. You know, obviously they're human, they're going to miss, but with Angel, jeez.
He's just garbage.
He's incredible.
Did you see the YouTube video on worst umpire in baseball, Angel Hernandez? There's like two or three things on him and he is just a joke. He even said he missed counts. Like, why is he still umpiring?
Joe West?
Very strong union.
Joe West isn't much good.
No, Joe West is retired, I think.
Yeah, he's retired.
He's retired. You
know, they put him in for the Hall of Fame, and my wife and I looked at each other. Why?
Longevity.
And, you know, I mean, he could barely get around the bases. He was, you know, Eric Gregg Jr. And he wasn't that great of an ump. You know, he was confrontational. And that's the thing that if you're a good ump, when you don't talk about an ump, he's a great ump. You know, I've talked to Dale Scott about this many times. When you don't have to talk about an umpire, he's done his job. You know, these guys that go, Angel is a perfect example. He'll go out of his way to track somebody down.
Oh, he sure will.
That's wrong.
In the AL or NLCS, one umpire, it was the AL. It was like game two. Things like Jordan Baker was looking at, unlike Jordan, nobody's there to see you get in a confrontation with a dugout. Just call the game.
Exactly. Okay?
I'm like, dude, nobody paid to see you. Just call the bleeping game. That's exactly all I ask.
Exactly. We have about one minute to go, gentlemen.
Before we end up, I do want to sort of get back to the World Series and get the general sense of where we all think things are going to go. My sense is most of us, if not all of us, think that Texas is going to find a way to win this thing.
I think they're going to get it in six. Look, like I said before, whoever wins two out of three in this next three games in Phoenix is going to get the leg up with a chance to close that series out in Texas.
Absolutely.
Going to win for the first time.
You're right. You're right. I think so too. And like I said before, I've watched Boach for years in the Bay Area. Don't bet against Boachy.
Look, I love me some Bruce Boachy. But what do you think about the Giants getting the former Padre manager?
It's weird because my wife is a huge Padres fan since she's from San Diego. She was disappointed, but I think he missed, he's from the Bay Area and I think he loves it up here.
I think he's just a joke.
We are out of time. Sorry to cut you short. We are out of time for this edition of Sports Roundtable. Bob Busser, a real pleasure having you back with us today. And we'll have you back some other time in the future as well. Take care. I want to thank everybody else for their participation too. Sheila, thank you for being our host. And of course, Don, Mike, Peter, Luther, thank you as well. And go safe, everybody, with God's abundant blessings. See you next week on Sports Roundtable. Have a great day.